The sun was lowering toward the western horizon as they looked back on the San Francisco skyline, bathed in a reddish-gold color. As transport gained speed, they approached the Golden Gate Bridge, and everyone pushed and shoved to get a place on deck to see the symbol of the gateway to America and departure to the Pacific Ocean. From that moment, they were officially embarking on a great adventure on the other side of the world. All eyes were straining to see the landmarks and beauty of the panorama of the bay that many would see again when their enlistment ended with a discharge and a fair home. Some would never see this sight again. The Pacific Ocean was beautiful, and Lee wondered, should he have chosen to join the Navy? He pondered his choices when he took his turn at climbing the mast and standing his watch in the crow's nest. While this was technically a Navy duty, their commanding officer issued an order that the Army personnel were to stand their own watches. This was intended to instill self-confidence and overcome basic fears of the ocean most men carried with them. Lee stood his watches during some of the heaviest seas and never suffered from the ill effects it had on some. He was surprised at those who were simply unable to overcome their fear or suffered from the dreaded seasickness, but were otherwise sturdy enough for Army service. Many of the large, muscular, loud, and intimidating men could not handle it, while small and quiet, confident men seemed to take it in stride. Lee was one of the latter. The rolling and pitching only added to his feeling of daring do, reminding him of taking a ride in a hot air balloon in younger days. He wished there were a way to sail through the clouds. Had there been an option for aviation and enlistment, he felt sure he would have taken it. Lee was assigned duties of caring for the horses due to his skill and knowledge of the animals. He didn't mind it, and was able to forego other monotonous routines on the voyage in favor of looking after the livestock. He laughed at the city boys who found the heat and odors pure torture heaped upon their suffering from seasickness. With a cavalry regiment and field artillery, the ship's ventilation system was not sufficient to provide fresh air below decks, especially when rough seas prevented men from sleeping on deck. The surgeons were called upon to treat maladies such as severe headaches, attributed to a lack of oxygen. There were some blowers for moving the air, but insufficient in numbers and without exhaust. Combined with registers opened immediately over the top bunks, the situation caused some discomfort that the troops would close the registers or stuff them with paper, increasing the fouled air. They arrived in Hawaii in wonderment at the beauty of the tropical paradise. As they were to learn later, surreal beauty would conceal the lethal dangers from men, women, and nature. The men were given shore leave and headed straight for the red light districts. The sailors laughed at the soldiers and their haste to get to the districts. Finally, in January, the transport arrived at Mindanao, a large southern island inhabited by Moros. The infantry took station on this island at Torrey Barracks, and Battery D on the same island at Camp Overton. The other batteries and regimental headquarters were stationed at Agura Barracks on the island of Jolo, inhabited by the Mohammedans. The Moros were the ethnic Muslims who lived in the southern Philippines, an area that includes Mindanao, Jolo, and the neighboring Sulu Archipelago. The word was also synonymous with fierce warriors that lived to pirate, enslave, rob, and pillage the rest of the inhabitants, regardless of race or religion, even their own Islamic people. Most of the people lived in small villages and towns concentrated along the coastlines. The interior areas were mountainous, with thick jungles and few railroads, roads, or trails. The rainy season lasted from the end of May through October, making movement of men and equipment nearly impossible.